All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is November 26, 2025. And our top stories this morning. First, let's start across the pond to my friends in the UK. They're raising taxes in England by quite a bit, apparently, and all over the place, and for everybody. I just love this story. You know, everybody's dying from inflation, and the cost of living is going up faster than their wages are, you know. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know what would go nice with this? Higher taxes. Nobody ever. Well, that's what you're getting in the UK. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, and the Labour Party came out with their budget plan this morning. And actually, the bond market kind of likes it, but for the wrong reason. No spending cuts and more taxes. That's what's coming here. First of all, the budget was released early. It's not supposed to happen, but it did. And they're like, oh, gosh, we're real sorry about that. We don't know how that happened. And I'm sure nobody was out there trading on that early information that wasn't released to the public. I mean, it's crazy to think that might ever happen, right? But taxes are going up pretty much for everyone. The first thing that a lot of people noticed is that the income tax brackets are not rising. Now, keep in mind, guys, wages are constantly going up, albeit very, very slowly and certainly not at the same rate of inflation. And so if you don't raise the tax brackets, what happens is poor people whose wages rise, all of a sudden, according to the tax brackets, they're not poor anymore and their taxes go up. So this is a de facto tax increase on working people. And Rachel Reeves is like, yeah, we know this is a tax increase on working people. But if it makes you feel any better, we're going to hurt your rich neighbors even more than we're hurting you. And I guess that's supposed to pass for good news in the UK right now. Not my idea. Let's see. What else we have going on? EV mileage tax. That's hilarious. We talked about that last week. The UK created this gasoline tax to try to drive more people to buy electric vehicles, you know, because climate. And so, okay, they started collecting all this money on the gasoline tax, and then people started buying EVs. And then all of a sudden, the politicians were like, oh my goodness, the gasoline tax revenue is going down because people are adopting EVs. Well, wasn't that the idea in the first place? It doesn't matter. We can't let tax revenue go down. How about a new tax on electric vehicles? That way we are both subsidizing and taxing the same freaking product simultaneously. Yep. Leave it to 2020's politics to come up with that one. So that's going on. We've got more increases in the taxes on luxury properties. We've already seen the absolute exodus of wealthy people from the UK over the last few years over the prior tax hikes. We've also seen luxury real estate values plummeting in London. That's going to get worse now. And in addition to that, we've got other taxes on lower income properties, taxes on dividends, and even taxes on savings income. And that just really completes the set. When the most fiscally reckless and financially irresponsible people in the world try to make up for their own idiotic policy mistakes by punishing the people who are doing the prudent thing and saving money, well, that is what passes for politics in the UK. Now, look, the bond market in the UK likes this right now. The UK gilt yield is actually down a little bit. The bond market was ready to pounce on this budget, kind of like it did back in October of 2022 when Liz Truss and her Chancellor of the Exchequer, Kwasi Kwarteng, tried to lower taxes, i.e. leaning on the bond market and borrowing more without any spending cuts. The bond market threw a fit. And the gilt yield has been like hovering right around that same level ever since. It was ready to spike today if the market didn't like what it saw. But the fact that those tax revenues are probably going to be going up, the bond market is relieved, at least for now, on that one. We'll see how the people who are going to pay for it feel, though. That's a big question mark. Also going on this morning, we've got earnings from Dell. Another one of the, we'll say, second-tier AI players reported. Now, Dell's earnings were kind of mixed here. We've got a revenue miss. That's the first thing, a miss on revenue, not good for Dell, especially considering you're expected to beat expectations if you're in the AI space these days. So that's not good. But they did raise their guidance, and the market appears to be focusing on that guidance raise for now. Now, I suspected Dell was going to come out with some bad reports when I saw Supermicro's earnings. They announced delays in data center projects. CoreWeave announced delays in data center projects. And then TSSI Inc., which is one of Dell's suppliers, announced a 40% drop in revenue a few weeks ago. So I expected bad news from Dell. This is actually a little bit better than I was expecting. But look, data center revenue was in line. That's in their infrastructure solutions group is where data center revenue lives for Dell. When data center comes in line with expectations, that you could argue is a miss because you're expected, again, to beat expectations. But really, it looks like the main driver of the revenue miss was PC and laptop sales. Now, that's kind of interesting because Best Buy just reported pretty good earnings and sales forecasts. I think it was just yesterday we were talking about that on better device sales and surges in the upgrade cycle. So I'm surprised to see Dell's PC and laptop segment doing pretty poorly. But for now, the market is rewarding that guidance raise from Dell. The stock is up this morning. Will it fade? As we've seen pretty much everybody else in the AI space, absent Google, that is, fade after an initial surge in earnings. We got a couple more stories in the AI space this morning. SoftBank shares are now down 40% from their recent highs, all on worries over their investments in OpenAI. And why are they worried so much about OpenAI? Maybe it's got something to do with this Financial Times headline that is just freaking hilarious. OpenAI needs to raise $207 billion by 2030 so it can continue to lose money. Not my words, Financial Times reporting that. Yikes, what a financial CF OpenAI is. This bubble is on borrowed time. We've got, what else we have? 6 million households are now delinquent on their utility bills. 6 million households. An average of $789 worth of seriously delinquent utility bills that are about to get sent to collections. That's up 10% year over year. Why? The rising cost of living and, of course, higher electricity prices, 12% higher year over year because of data centers. Isn't that great? Poor people getting sent to collections because Sam Altman needs you to blow into his AI bubble. The sooner this bubble pops and blows up, the better for everybody. It's going to hurt everybody when it pops. I mean, it's already too late, though. That pain, that damage has been done. But the longer it takes for this bubble to pop, the worse it's going to be for the average person. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. Yikes. Also going on this morning, we've got John Deere earnings and outlook disappointed. That stock is down. The pain for U.S. farmers continues, reflected in Deere's earnings. And right along the lines of that same story, we've got a story about China. They are dragging their feet on the soybean purchases that they promised to make. Raise your hand if you're surprised. Nobody? Oh, nobody? Oh, wait, this just in. The Chinese never keep their promises. Okay, more news at 11. By the way, hello to all you adorable little G-bots. I love when you guys show up in my comments with your yay China mantras, and thank you for the engagement. You guys are just adorable. What else we have? Initial and job and continuing jobless claims just got released today. We haven't seen that in a while because of the government shutdown. And also noteworthy is they very quietly released all the prior weeks of data. The initial and continuing claims during the entirety of the government shutdown, they all just got released. Hey, you know, we're not getting inflation. We're not getting GDP data. We're not getting jobs numbers. Why do we have all the initial and continuing claims numbers then if we don't have any of the other data that apparently didn't get collected? Or maybe we're just selectively releasing the data that we like and withholding the data people aren't going to like because of some other reasons. I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. We got a story out of Korea about a company called Home Plus, which was run into the ground by private equity, and they're putting the company up for sale, and nobody wants it. No bidders for Home Plus. Why? Because the assets of the company are worth less than the debt that is owed on it, and so nobody wants to step up and buy it. We've also got Wall Street's top cop in New York is warning private credit about their marks, saying, hey, guys, this stuff that you're holding on your books isn't worth what you're claiming it's worth. You're faking your numbers. You know, the same thing I've been saying on this channel for well over a year now. Nice of you guys to catch up to that one. And we've got a terrifying story in Hong Kong this morning. Several high-rises have caught fire. When these buildings were all being upgraded or were all being rehabbed, refurbished at the same time. They were using bamboo scaffolding, which apparently is very common in Hong Kong. And scaffolding in one building caught fire, and it has spread from high rise to high rise to high rise. We've got at least 13 people confirmed dead. That is probably going to get a lot worse. Some frightening images out of Hong Kong this morning. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. And while we're here, how about you guys hit that like button for the YouTube algorithm? You new guys can hit the subscribe button and come on back because we do this one every single day with the exception of tomorrow, Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And Friday this week, we won't be doing a live show on Friday. Be spending some time with the family and we'll be back next week. And by the way, just real quick, I'm also going to move my Patreon Zoom that we do every Friday. That's going to be on Sunday night. I'll be posting that link later today. Right now, we've got the S&P 500 is higher by 20 points or 0.3%, just barely higher ahead of the bell. The Dow is up 112 points, a quarter of 1% higher. We've had a couple of days of green for the Dow in a row now. And the NASDAQ is up 114 points, 0.46% to the upside. So stocks are up across the board on what is probably going to be a low volume day. The U.S. dollar index is a little bit higher here, 0.11% to the upside, 99.92 for the Dixie. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are higher in the United States here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.668. That's higher by one basis point. The 10-year, 4.020, higher by 2 points. The 2 years at 3.487, higher by almost 3 points. And the 1 month is at 3.985, higher by almost 2 points for the 1 month there. I wonder if that is indicative maybe of expectations for the Fed's rate cut in December. Let's check that out while we're here, shall we? We're going to go out of order a little bit today. Right now, the expectations for a rate cut in Fed, the market is pricing in an 82% likelihood of the Fed cutting in December. So know that move in the 1 month is unrelated to expectations for December rate activity. Looking over at the Bitcoin right now, we've got Bitcoin at 86,634. That is as priced on Coinbase here. We're looking at hourly candles right now. We're down a few hundred bucks from where we were yesterday. I mentioned on my stream yesterday that we had kind of put in, is this not working? No, it's not working. All right. Well, my drawings aren't working right now. Anyway, I expect Bitcoin to drop here. If you see, we've been falling for quite a while. Then we put in this bear flag pattern, and I expect to break down from this and see a pretty big drop. But we'll see what happens over the weekend. Thanksgiving dinner has always been interesting for Bitcoin. People go and talk to their weird uncle about all the money they've made in Bitcoin. Well, this year they're going to be going and talking to their weird uncle about all the money they lost in Bitcoin over the last few weeks. We'll see if that affects the price action over the next few days. Looking over at commodities, we've got metals are having a good morning, although they are off their highs. We were up more than a dollar in silver earlier today. Now we're up a fraction of that. Spot gold, $4,146. That's higher by $15.63 or 0.38% to the upside. February gold futures are up by that same 0.38, now 0.39%. $41.81 for February COMEX futures. That's higher by $16.15. Looking over at my favorite of the shiny spot silver, $52.27. That's higher by 78 bucks or 1.52%. We have seen silver quietly grind back up into the mid, or we'll say the low 50s here, now threatening those previous highs. We'll look at the chart in just a second. But first, we've got December COMEX futures at 51.86. We're seeing that that arbitrage here, the backwardation growing a little bit. We're now about 50 cents or now, sorry, we're still about 30. How about math? How about Jack does some accurate math this morning? We are about 50 cents higher, the London price now versus the New York price in December. So that is indicative of shortages in London. The New York price is up by 79 cents or 1.55%. I like the shiny. Copper is up by 1.4%. Platinum is up by 0.9%. Palladium is up by 1.5%. And oil is down again by about a third of a percent, $57.93 for January WTI futures. That's off by about 18 cents. Let's take a look at the silver chart. Are my drawings going to work? Let's see. Let's refresh this. This is very annoying when my drawing tools aren't working here. All right, we're looking at 1 day candles now. Here's the price of silver, and can any of you guys see what I see? That looks like your cup. That looks like maybe your handle. And if we get back to this water level, which is right around $54 and change, then silver go uppy from there. That's what I see happening here. So keep an eye on that roughly 54 level. We're still a ways off from that, but you can see the handle is already starting to arc upward. Again, I like the shiny. And gold is looking a little similar, but slightly different. If I had to call this one, I'd say gold looks like it is putting in a pennant pattern here, which is a bullish continuation pattern after a rapid rise. And that is what we have seen recently in gold. We've seen a rapid rise, and that also means that gold is probably getting set for another move to the upside. So keep an eye on your shinies over these next few weeks, guys. The metal space has been quiet since we hit that peak in mid-October. It's been consolidating here, but the underlying bullishness that has driven metals higher, that's all still there. All right, let's talk about what's going on in the UK. We're not going to use this article. We're going to use this one, Budget 2025. Key points at a glance. This one in The Guardian this morning. Rachel Reeves is announcing her financial update. Here are the main points. The first things first is they released it early. As she stood at the dispatch box, Reeves opens by saying it was deeply disappointing and a serious error on their part that the budget was released ahead of time. Yeah, you got to give the banks early heads up so that they can pre-position for the market reaction. And then, of course, you have to call it outrageous and say, we're super sorry after you get exposed for doing that. But again, I'm sure nobody actually insider traded on that information. I mean, that's just a crazy conspiracy theory by Twitter randos, right? All right. So what some of the things that are going on here, as expected, Reeves will freeze income tax and national insurance thresholds for another 3 years from 2028, continuing a freeze implemented by the previous government. This will bring more people into higher tax bands. It's a tax hike without an actual tax hike. Reeves admits this decision will affect working people, but says new reforms to the tax system will ensure that the wealthiest contribute the most. And doesn't that make you feel better that the Joneses, who you're always trying to keep up with, we're going to punish them more than we're punishing you. So high five for all the big government types out there. Yay, everybody's getting punished by the government. Feels like a win somehow. Basic rates of income tax and value-add tax and national insurance will not go up. Let's see, what else we have here? The basic and higher rates of tax on property, dividend, and savings income will go up by 2 percentage points each. And I can't help but notice property, okay, that's how like you're always perpetually renting your own property, even if you want it outright from the government. We're going to punish them even more. And then dividends and savings, we're going to raise taxes on those things. So that people who are behaving in a financially responsible manner, setting something aside from the future, not spending money they don't have, we're going to punish them and we're going to force them to pay the bill for the people who can't control themselves, constantly spending and wasting other people's money. Yep, let's punish the responsible members of society in order to bankroll the leeches. Oh yeah, that's going to go great. That's going to go just really good. There will also be a high-value council tax surcharge for properties worth more than £2 million. That's going to be £2,500 a year, rising to £7,500 for properties worth more than £5 million. Look, they're going to punish wealthy landowners even more. We're already seeing a lot of the wealthy are leaving the UK. This is only going to speed that up. We've already seen prices for luxury real estate in London have been in decline. This is going to expedite that. If you abuse your tax base long enough, you will soon find that you have no tax base left to abuse. See also Illinois, New York, everybody with any money got out of those states, and they're all living in Florida right now. But the UK bond market for now likes it because we were showing this chart actually on my interview with Mario from Maneco 64 last week. What I have circled here, this was the UK gilt crisis back when Liz Truss got promptly booted from office after trying to lower taxes without cutting spending. We've been kind of at that same level this whole time. And the market was sitting here ready to pounce on any mistakes by Rachel Reeves if she increased borrowing. If she was going to say, oh, we're going to increase spending but not raise taxes, the bond market would have freaked out and we would have seen yields rising higher. That didn't happen. But again, punishing people via higher taxes, we'll see how that goes over politically, especially raising taxes on working class people who are already just being absolutely clobbered by the rising cost of living. But for now, UK 10-year gilt yields are down 8 basis points, almost 9 basis points here. The bond market likes this budget. Also going on this morning, Dell misses on revenue, offers strong forecast driven by AI sales. That revenue miss, the market seems to be glossing over that for now and focusing on that strong forecast. Dell reported fiscal third quarter earnings on Tuesday that missed Wall Street expectations for revenue, but the company forecasted a stronger than expected fourth quarter driven by increased AI sales. Earnings per share of 259 adjusted versus 247 estimated. So it's a beat on earnings, but revenue 27.01 billion versus 27.13 billion estimated. That is a miss. It's not a big miss, but AI companies missing on revenue, the market would typically punish that here. Now, Dell said it expect about 31.5 billion in sales for the fourth quarter versus the 27.59 billion analysts had expected. Company said it expects fourth quarter EPS of 350 versus 321 expected. So that guidance is trumping the miss for now. Let's see, what do we have here? Data center business called Infrastructure Solutions Group reported 14.11 billion in sales in line with analyst estimates. That's a miss. When your data center business segment reports in line, the market expects you to beat that. And it's only in line. Of that, 10.1 billion was for servers and networking parts, which was up 37% on an annual basis. The demand is insane, the growth, all that stuff. Yeah. Much of that increase was driven by 5.6 billion in AI server shipments. Dell said it sold 4 billion of storage gear during the quarter. But the company said that its laptop and PC business called Client Solutions Group reported 12.48 billion in sales, which was up 3% year over year, but lower than the 12.65 billion expected by analysts. So it's their laptop and PC business primarily responsible for that revenue miss, along with just meeting expectations for data center. Dell's laptop and PC business was hit particularly hard, declining 7% on an annual basis. Now, for now, Dell shareholders are liking this report. It's up 5.7% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $133.13. We have seen this before. These post-earnings bumps in share price get quickly sold and faded, and it ends up closing red for the day. We'll see if Dell does the same thing. Now, for the year, Dell is currently up about 9.27% year to date. So it's still up for the year, up more this morning. We'll see if that one holds. Meanwhile, also on the AI front, SoftBank's 40% slide from peak shows worry over giant OpenAI bet. Guys, I don't OpenAI is not the best game in town now. Google is now eating their lunch with Gemini 3. Not good for SoftBank. Those headlines yesterday were not good. Growing unease over frothy artificial intelligence valuations is weighing on shares of SoftBank, which traders increasingly view as a proxy for privately held OpenAI. The Japanese tech investor sits at the forefront of a global AI sell-off amid worries about new pressure on OpenAI following Alphabet's Gemini 3 debut. SoftBank shares have plunged 40% since late October, erasing over 16 trillion yen, or $102 billion in market value, as its founder Masa-san prepares to double down on OpenAI and the infrastructure that supports it. SoftBank has ridden the global AI investment boom faster than any other Japanese company. Its exposure to OpenAI and a $14.6 billion gain on that stake helped it post a surprise 2.5 trillion yen net income in the fiscal second quarter, putting it on track for one of the highest annual profits. And by the way, that big beat that SoftBank reported, it was completely manufactured. All they did was arbitrarily increase the value of their OpenAI shares that they held on their books, and presto, boom, an earnings beat. OpenAI, a company that is burning cash. Okay, if you really think you're making money on that, I guess I can't help you. Look at what SoftBank shares have done. We're looking at a five-year chart right now. And tell me it's a bubble without actually telling me it's a bubble. I mean, when you see a stock do this and then do that, number one, pump and dump comes to mind. And number two, bubble comes to mind. SoftBank shares down 11% yesterday on that Google News, trading at $50. It's now down over 40% from its $90 and change threshold that we hit in the middle of October or late October. But even after that decline, let's look at year to date. Even after that 40% decline from its peak, it's still up 73% year to date. This one's got a long way to fall. And why does it have a long way to fall? Check out this hilarious headline in the Financial Times. OpenAI needs to raise at least $207 billion by 2030 so it can continue to lose money, HSBC estimates. We're not going to get too deep in the weeds. They do a lot of math and a lot of analysis here. But guys, just take a moment and appreciate this headline. They need to raise $207 billion so they can keep losing money. And I've been saying this for a while. OpenAI and this bubble in its entirety, because so goes OpenAI, so goes the bubble. Without an endless flow of new capital from new investors, OpenAI goes belly up. And when OpenAI goes belly up, this bubble is done. NVIDIA sales, CoreWeave sales, all of it goes up in smoke. And honestly, the story about Google yesterday, when people are like, Google now holds the fate of the AI bubble in their hands, I don't think that's even true. Because to be honest with you, Google's success with Gemini 3 may actually expedite the decline of OpenAI, because nobody's going to want to invest $207 billion in the second best player in the AI space now. And so Google's success with Gemini is going to expedite the decline of OpenAI, which is actually going to accelerate the bursting of the bubble and the ultimate decline in NVIDIA shares. So that news from Google yesterday was a lot worse than people really appreciate right now. This company is an absolute financial CF. And while all this is going on, all this money is going up in smoke, look at what they're doing to poor people. Nearly 6 million households have severe delinquent utility debt that soon will be sent to collection agencies. Never mind what that's going to do to the consumer economy, what that's going to do to credit scores and the housing market. 6 million households about to go to collection for the electric bill. Nearly 6 million U.S. households have utility debts so severe that they are at risk of being reported to collection agencies, according to new analysis from the Century Foundation, drawing from the University of California Consumer Credit Panel. Past due balances to utility companies rose 9.7% between April and June of 2024 and the same period in 2025, so up almost 10% year over year, reaching an average of $789 per household. That's just the delinquent balance. Monthly energy bills jumped 12% in the same time frame, driving overdue balances higher and causing distress for families prioritizing these payments alongside mortgage and auto loans. Auto loans, of course, the delinquencies there are skyrocketing, along with credit cards and student loans as well. The spike in delinquencies reflects not only rising utility costs, but also broader pressures on household budgets, as some families fall behind on other bills too. In other words, inflation, wages aren't keeping up with the rising cost of living. No shock to anybody there. But look at this next point. Increased demand and costs are partly driven by growth of electricity-hungry AI data centers, while local regulations and energy policies also play a role. Sam Altman needs you to blow into his bubble. Who cares what it does to poor people? Who cares what it does to their utility bills, which are up 12% year over year, and they're all going to collections and their credit scores are in the toilet? Who cares, right? Sam Altman needs another $1 trillion. All will be sacrificed at the altar of NVIDIA's data center revenue. The sooner this bubble pops, the better. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, we've got John Deere outlook falls short as farm rebound remains elusive. The pain for U.S. farmers is reflected in these John Deere numbers. Deere's first outlook for the year ahead fell short of expectations as uncertainty continues to surround the timing for a recovery in the U.S. farm economy. The world's biggest farm machinery maker said net income in the fiscal year will be between $4 and $4.75 billion, below the average estimate of $5.31 billion. That is well below the average estimate. That is a big guide light from John Deere. Shares fell as much as 6.3% before the start of regular trading. The weak outlook for the maker of iconic green and yellow tractors comes as farmers have been hit hard by low crop prices and President Trump's tariff policies. Despite a recent deal between the U.S. and China to boost shipments of American crops to Asia, there's still questions on whether the sales will be enough to shake the U.S. farm economy out of years-long slump. More on that in a second. Looking ahead, we believe 2026 will mark the bottom of the large ag cycle, the CEO said. Deere estimated 2026 sales for its large agriculture segment, which caters to the biggest farmers of crops, such as corn and soybeans, to be down 15 to 20% in the U.S. and Canada. South America is seen as flat for tractors and crop cutting combines, but that 15 to 20% decline in U.S. and Canada sales, yikes, this business is falling off a cliff here. The company reported increased fourth quarter sales due to both higher shipments and prices, but operating profit decreased due to elevated costs linked in part to tariffs. Deere in August said tariffs such as those on U.S. imports of steel and aluminum cost the company $600 million. So John Deere is getting hit at both ends by the tariffs, right? They're paying higher prices for steel. A lot of steel goes into a tractor and a combine, obviously. But not just the tariffs that they're paying on their inputs, but the tariffs that their customers are suffering from, because the biggest retaliation against the U.S. in the trade war has been targeting U.S. farmers. And so U.S. farmers have less money to spend on John Deere's products. Tariffs are hurting this company at both ends here. John Deere is down 4.5%, actually 4.9%. The opening bell has rung $474.34 for Deere, although year-to-date the company was up 17.5%, so I guess it's not all that bad, giving back some of those prior gains from the year. Meanwhile, it doesn't look like it's going to get much better anytime soon. Soybeans remain steady as traders await news of China purchases. The Chinese said they were going to buy 12 million tons of soybeans before the end of the year, which is only about 5 weeks away, and they're dragging their feet, as pretty much we all knew they were going to. Soybean prices held steady as traders awaited fresh news on China's U.S. purchases, which is unlikely to come before the Thanksgiving holiday. President Trump told reporters Tuesday that he urged President Xi Jinping to speed up and increase China's purchases of U.S. ag products, saying Beijing had more or less agreed during their phone call earlier this week. China bought at least 10 cargoes of U.S. soybeans in contracts signed Tuesday, Reuters reported. Those 10 cargoes that they bought, guys, that's about 500,000 tons of soybeans, or about 1/24 of what the Chinese said they were going to buy before the end of this year, which is rapidly approaching. So at their current pace, the Chinese won't get anywhere near what they promised. So, it, you know, there's some encouraging news. They're saying the right things, but when the rubber meets the road, the action doesn't match the words. The Chinese are still dragging their feet on those soybean purchases, and that is hurting U.S. farmers. Meanwhile, we quietly got 2 months worth of initial jobless claims data. That just came out this morning. Initial jobless claims in the United States, 216,000. That is down rather sharply from the highs that we saw at the beginning of September of 264,000. I suspect government shutdowns and layoffs may have contributed to that big spike there. But also noteworthy, look at all these other bars from the beginning of November and October and the end of September. All of the jobless claims data during the government shutdown was quietly dumped this morning. And it actually shows a slow downtick in initial jobless claims. Kind of makes you wonder if we can get this data. How come we're not getting CPI? How come we're not getting non-farm payrolls? Where's the GDP numbers? That's a little odd. But the silver lining here, initial jobless claims are going down, albeit slowly. Now, that being said, continuing jobless claims don't look so good. Same story. We got the numbers for this week and for all the data during the shutdown. For the week ended November 15th, 1.96 million continuing jobless claims, up slightly from 1.95 million in the prior week. So even though the pace of layoffs, at least according to the initial claims data, appears to be slowing, the people who are losing their jobs are not finding new ones. So the pile of people on the jobless claim, that continues to rise. Also worth pointing out, this data is somewhat in conflict with some of the ADP data that we saw come out over the last few weeks. We talked about that weekly ADP number yesterday. That was showing consistent job losses, so a little bit of conflict here. And you got to take this data with an asterisk and a grain of salt here because the government was shut down when all this was supposedly collected. Who collected it? Did they impute it? Did they estimate it? We don't know. But we did get all the data backfilled during the shutdown. It looks like continuing claims dropped and then rose again. We're pretty much right back where we were at the end of the summer. Meanwhile, Korea's private equity debate in focus as HomePlus goes unbid. Who wants to buy a company whose debt exceeds the value of the liquidation of all of its assets? And it turns out the answer is surprisingly freaking nobody. It's actually not surprising at all. Korea has the same private equity problems that the United States has. They're running perfectly good businesses into the ground. The most closely watched corporate rehabilitation case in South Korea, underscoring risks with private equity ownership, just took a turn that threatens to deepen those concerns. Troubled retail chain HomePlus, owned by buyout firm MBK Partners and in court receivership, didn't receive any final bids by a deadline on Wednesday. As Seoul Bankruptcy Court said, that comes after it opened itself up to a potential takeover earlier this year in a step to avoid liquidation. The case has been at the epicenter of renewed debate about private equity standing in South Korea. The nation's private equity fund industry just this week promised new self-regulation after a string of controversies, including the stumble of HomePlus, shook public confidence and triggered calls for tighter oversight. MBK has sought buyers for HomePlus after a review showed that the company's value, if it were liquidated, would exceed its going concern value, I think they meant to say would not exceed its going concern value unless external funding were secured through measures such as attracting investments. HomePlus said, although there were no bidders, it will continue to receive bids until December 29th, which is the deadline for the company to submit its rehab plans to the court. Okay, so maybe they should say, although they received no bidders, they will continue receiving no bidders until December 29th. Good news, nobody wants to buy it, but it's still for sale. I guess that's what they're saying. Regardless of the outcome of this public bidding, there is no doubt that a merger and acquisition is the most realistic recovery plan, even though nobody wants to merge with us, HomePlus said in a statement. We will give an effort until the very end to secure an M&A deal to ensure employment stability for approximately 100,000 direct and indirect employees, partner companies, and tenants. Yikes, 100,000 people have their job riding on this company that a private equity firm has run into the ground, and now they're looking for somebody to hold the bag, and they can't find somebody to hold the bag. Hey, that's just like private equity here in the United States, isn't it? It's good to know that that's universal across the globe, something that reaches across the cultural barriers. Private credit's sketchy marks, meanwhile, are getting a warning shot from Wall Street's top cop. Is this really a warning shot? I don't know. There's this guy, Jay Clayton. More on him in a minute. Wall Street's top prosecutor has a warning for private market players getting creative with their numbers. Stark divergences in how competing firms value private assets in their portfolios are drawing increasing attention from market participants, academics, and now the Department of Justice, according to Jay Clayton, the head of its Manhattan outpost. By the way, stark divergences in how they value private assets? Let me translate that. They're lying about what their shit's worth, and now the cops are getting involved. There are definitely some areas of concern for me in private markets, Clayton said in an interview. People should know that the financial regulators and the department are looking at those. Well, keep up the bad work, regulators. It's good to know you're looking, and you're probably seeing what we're all seeing, but you're not doing squat about it. Now, why are they not doing anything about it? Well, this guy Clayton took over the DOJ's office for the Southern District of New York after President Trump announced shortly after last year's election that he intended to make him the de facto sheriff of Wall Street. At the time, Clayton was chairman of Apollo Global Asset Management, one of the most dominant players in private markets. So the top cop in private credit was the chairman of the biggest player in private credit. And we wonder why they're not doing anything about it. Now, this is something of a catch-22, because how do you get the experience and the knowledge necessary to police these things without working in that industry? But at the same time, the revolving door between the market participants and the regulators is a huge problem, and it's why our regulatory bodies are so toothless. And the fact that the chairman of Apollo is now the head of the DOJ in the Southern District of New York, are you freaking kidding me? And if it makes you feel any better, he previously led the SEC during Trump's first term. Okay. And we wonder why the regulators don't do anything. Good God. Good God. Last but not least, guys, scary story in Hong Kong here. Fire engulfs high-rise housing estate, killing at least 13. Five others injured, three of them critically, in the fire at the Wang Fuk Court in Northern District of Taipo. The fire services said, look at this image. Holy crap. This is terrifying, guys. There is no way to put this out. You're never in a million years going to put this out. You can go up there with high-rise packs and try. This thing is going to burn until it's had its fill. I mean, you can see here they got the tower set up, and they're trying to get some water on this thing. It's landing at, like, the third floor. Everything exposed to this fire is going to burn, and then it'll burn itself out. It looks like the scaffolding is what happened here. They use bamboo scaffolding in Hong Kong. Apparently, that's very, very popular in Asia. It's very strong, but it's also highly combustible. And as soon as one went up, this fire just jumped from building to building to building. These are all occupied buildings. They were being refurbished. There's going to be a big body count from this one. I'm sure a lot of people didn't get out here. Fire tore through multiple high-rise towers at a Hong Kong estate on Wednesday, killing at least 13. Police received multiple reports of people trapped in the estate where bamboo scaffolding has been erected outside several towers. As they undergo renovation, local media reported five others were injured, three of them critically in the fire at Wang Fuk Court in the Northern District of Taipo. At least one firefighter was killed. Hong Kong's director of fire services, Yong Yan Kim, told a news conference. Scary story in Hong Kong here, guys. I don't know how you put that thing out. You just surround and drown. Just let it burn. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. P. Nice, who says, Happy Thanksgiving, Jack. Thanks for giving the show. You are most welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to you, P. Nice, and all you other Melonheads out there. Gobble, gobble, guys. Enjoy this time with family this week. Hey, thank you very much to Francois2632, who gifted 5 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you, sir. Welcome to the Melonheads, you 5 baby melons. You be sure and say thank you to Francois. And just a reminder, guys, when you're a member, you get a free super chat. Feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. Hey, Francois is back again with 5 more. That's 10 if my calculations are correct. Thank you very much, Francois. Once again, I appreciate that. And now we've got another Frank. It's a good day for the Franks and the Franzes. He gifted 5 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Now we're up to 15. The math just keeps getting harder and harder. Thank you so much, Frank. Welcome to the Melonheads, everybody. Francois is back again with 10 more. 25 as the crow flies. The numbers just keep getting bigger. The melons, they're multiplying like Mogwai that get wet. They multiply with water. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate that. Welcome to the Melonheads. And here's my buddy Travis, who says he's second. I don't know about that second, Travis. You're a little slow on the draw these days, brother. I don't know. But hey, thank you so much. Everybody, check out Real Estate Mindset, by the way. He is the most bonkers man in real estate, my fellow doomer. And while we're on the subject of my fellow doomer, shout out to Melody Wright, who did a fantastic interview over at Thoughtful Money with Adam Taggart earlier this week, guys. Some frightening stuff in the housing market. Check out that interview when you get a chance. That was really eye-opening. Thank you very much, Travis. Appreciate the support, brother. Steve Woitis says, taxes up, government grows, government overspends, needs more taxes, repeat until monetary collapse. I'm looking for the flaw in your logic here. There isn't one. This is exactly how it works. This is what we do. This is what they're doing in the UK and France and Germany and freaking everywhere in Japan. Yeah. And the only constant is the government always grows. The government always grows and we always pay for it either through taxes or through inflation. It sucks. You'd think they would have learned something from 2022, but they didn't. The one thing that the early 2020s taught them was that frightened people will give away their wealth and their freedom for the perceived perception. Yeah, the perceived perception. Sure, why not? Of safety. Absolutely. That is what the early 2020s taught us. And I think these big government globalist types were emboldened by that. And now they're like, sure, raise taxes. Why not? Sucks, but that's the way of things, Steve. Thank you for supporting the channel, sir. Internet of Bugs. Hey, there's my buddy Carl. Welcome, Carl. I tell you, speaking of criticism of the AI bubble, Carl is fantastic. And not from the financial side, from the practical code, writing code, and is this real from a programming standpoint, is AI really as good as it says it is? Carl is a fantastic channel. I've had him as a guest on my channel. I learned so much listening to Carl. Great channel. Thank you so much, Carl, for becoming a member. Welcome to the Melonheads, sir. And guys, while you're at it, check out Internet of Bugs as well. Very good channel over there. M&J, what's going on, M&J? Says, Happy Thanksgiving to our amazing Melon Patch. Hope you all have a wonderful holiday. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Everybody, Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thank you so much, M&J, for everything you do for the channel. KDM28 says, I'm going to be the weird uncle talking about my medals. Happy Thanksgiving. Now you speak in my language, KDM. I am that weird uncle with the medals. Abso-freaking-lutely. Let's be honest. That's not the only reason I'm the weird uncle. But medals is another one. Absolutely. Hey, not bad, KDM. Thank you, sir, for the generosity, for supporting the channel. Damon, how do I say this? Damon. Thank you, D. Damon says, oh, Melonhead wise one. Is Buffett's play on Alphabet the newer, faster, cheaper AI chip play? Can Meta topple and assume NVIDIA's top seeding? Can Meta topple and assume NVIDIA's top seeding? I don't think Meta is really going to topple. To be honest with you, when this bubble pops and they start to punish capital incineration, I think Meta will be punished hardest because Meta incinerates capital better than any of them. Buffett's play on Google looks pretty wise. Now, remember, Buffett is big on value, and Google's valuation stretched the least of all the Mag 7 names. All the other ones stretched out the most. A lot of people were worried that Google was going to cannibalize its own business, that, okay, if they come out with a good large language model, all it's going to do is steal business from search, and therefore Google won't grow. And so Google's valuation didn't get as stretched. And I think Buffett looked at that and he compared it to the other big internet names. And he said, Google now represents a value. And then he buys Google in the third quarter. Next thing you know, Gemini 3 comes out and it's better than all the other large language models. Now Google's value starts to stretch a little bit. Buffett looks really good here. I mean, it was his final trade, one of his last acquisitions before he stepped back from Berkshire. And like much of his career, it was a really, really good trade. That being said, Google's success, like I said earlier, because Google's success could be the final nail in the coffin for OpenAI, that could actually expedite the collapse of the bubble. It's a little counterintuitive, but the logic is sound. Thank you very much, Damon, for supporting the channel. Charger Mopar, what's going on, brother? He's been a melonhead for 9 months and says, will people ever see central bankers as parasites? I do. We do. The melonheads do. But the central bankers control the banks, and the banks control the press and the media. And so the media doesn't listen, or the average person doesn't listen to guys like me, guys like us, Charger Mopar. The average person listens to whatever the corporate mouthpiece media tells them to think. And so will the central bankers ever be seen as parasites by the mainstream? Maybe eventually, but not without some big change. And I don't see that change happening. I mean, they got away with what they did in 2020 through 2022. Look at all the money they printed, making the rich richer and the poor poorer. And yet the average person thought the problem was that taxes weren't high enough. That's why things got so bad. They thought the problem was greed was invented in 2022, and that's why inflation got so bad, not the $6 or $7 trillion that they printed and gave to themselves. So until that changes, I don't think the central bankers will be seen as the parasites that they absolutely are. Thank you, Charger Mopar, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, happy Turkey Day, Jack and Melons. Gobble, gobble. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman. Ooh, frog in the throat. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman. Appreciate the good vibes. Did I say vibes? Oh, no, I did it. I used the V word. We won't do that anymore. Thank you, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel. And happy Thanksgiving to you and your family as well. And whoa, 20 more melon heads. Now we're up to 45. They're multiplying even more. Thank you so much, T.A. Chapman. Guys, don't forget to say thank you if you got one of those memberships. Really appreciate the support of the channel, sir. Mr. Clippy is back. Who's that VR sim racer? It looks like you're trying to leave a super chat. Want some help? My UK electric cost last month 42 cents equivalent per kilowatt hour. Yikes. That is like not quite, but almost quadruple what I'm paying here in the United States. What they're doing to you guys, that is unbelievable. Why is power so much more expensive in the UK versus in the US? Fuel isn't that much more expensive on the, but it's the same commodities that are being burned or turned in order to generate the electrons. The difference is policy, man. It's your politicians that are doing it to you. I wish it wasn't that way. 42 cents per kilowatt hour is insane. It shouldn't be that way. And look, access to energy and access to clean water are the like number one things that lift people out of abject poverty. And when they make power and water more expensive, they're pushing more people into poverty. It is inexcusable, especially because they're doing it for freaking data centers to make Sam and Jensen wealthier. Sorry to hear that, VR Sim Racer, but thank you for being a melonhead for 3 months. Learcy Noam says, happy Thanksgiving, Jack, Gigi, and all the melonheads. Right back at you, Learcy. Thank you so much for supporting the channel and for the well wishes to the family. Same to you and yours, sir. Only an acre, 5541, says, if and only if silver hits $54, what is cup and handle upside? All right, we'll do this one real quick. We are getting a little long in the tooth on the show here, but since you were so kind and you asked so politely, let's go back to the silver chart. All right, cup and handle upside. First thing we do is we draw our water line. It's roughly there. Don't hold me to these numbers, guys. We're just doing this on the fly here. And then we go from the waterline to the low of the cup, and we'll go all the way down to the intraday low. We'll go down to here. That is your potential upside. Then we have to make the chart a wee bit bigger so it'll fit, and we take that and we add it to the waterline. That gives us a potential price target. Hey, don't sue me here, guys. $63.22. All right, I'm not going to put a timeline on that, but that's what the cup and handle pattern is saying. Now, if we don't use the intraday high or the intraday low, let's say we use the closing low, That's a little more modest. That one puts us at a level something closer to about 61, 62, but there it is. That is a yikes. Yeah. Low 60s only an acre. Holy crap. I like this shiny. Again, no time horizon attached to that, guys. That is just the price target of the chart pattern. Excellent question, only an acre. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Break My Wallet Motorsports says lots of melon babies today. Merry Thanksgiving. Happy Christmas. All that good stuff. That's right. Look at all those little melons coming in. Chickens are going to be eating well. They love watermelon. Chickens just go nuts for the stuff. Thank you very much, Break My Wallet Motorsports, for supporting the channel. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well. Ryu, oh, I'm going to butcher this one. Ryu Kirito. He says, I watched Occupy Unmasked. Interesting watch. I have not seen Occupy Unmasked, but it is going on the list. I have a few days off coming up here, so maybe we'll throw that one on. I'm assuming that's on YouTube. Have not seen it, so I can't comment either way, but thank you so much, sir, for supporting the channel. He's back again, though. Ryu says, Happy Thanksgiving, y'all. Gobble, gobble. Right back at you, brother. Thank you, sir, for supporting that. Appreciate all the super chats, guys, all the well wishes. Ryu, a third one, says, I watched Thoughtful Money with Michael Oliver, and he thinks silver will quadruple within 6 months. That's aggressive. Hey, don't threaten me with a good time, but that's aggressive. Gold miners will spike. Maybe I'll buy. Look, I like this shiny. Maybe I don't like it that much. Also, keep in mind, guys, if silver quadruples in six months, think about what that does to the rest of the world. Not sure I want to live in that world. I own a lot of silver. I own some levered bets on silver. So, like, I'll make money on that. But the anarchy and the carnage that would result from that would probably eat up all those profits and then some. So I'm not sure. I definitely am sure I don't want silver to quadruple in 6 months. If silver wants to keep grinding higher a couple of cents a day in perpetuity, that I can get down with. A quadruple in 6 months, holy crap, no. Please, no. Thank you, Ryu. Appreciate that very much. Here he is again. They want poor people. That's why OT is taxed a lot. Hey, look, the middle class are notoriously difficult to control because the middle class doesn't want anything. The only thing the middle class wants is to be left alone, all right? They want to work their 8 hours. They want to go home and chill out for a little bit, maybe catch the kids' little league team, maybe take one or, God forbid, two vacations a year, have the weekend off to cut the grass. That's all the middle class wants. And people who don't want anything can't be controlled. People in poverty, however, you can control them very easily. You can move a herd of cattle just by relocating the salt lick, right? So people in poverty, the government loves that. And of course, putting more people into poverty means the wealthy get wealthier through extraction and monetary debasement. I'd love to argue with you, Ryu, but their actions and the results of their actions prove that that's exactly right. They want people poor, abso-freaking-lutely. And last one of the day, thank you, Mr. McMillan 601. He became a YouTube member. We got a lot of new melon heads here. Welcome to the Melon Patch, guys. Thank you so much for all the support of the channel. I hope you all have an excellent holiday weekend with you and your family. Please be safe. Don't drink and drive, all that good stuff. Avoid the Black Friday madness. And I just want to say thank you again so much for all those super chats. Thank you to my magnanimous melon heads on YouTube and Patreon. Links down below. Reminder, guys, our weekly get-together on Zoom. We're going to do that Sunday night instead of Friday this week because of the holiday. Also, reminder, no show tomorrow and Friday. Enjoy the time off, everybody. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. One more melon head, Barbie 520 for the road. Welcome to the Melon Heads, Barbie. Everybody, until next time, live small and dream big.